Prime Minister Modi being received by members of the U.S. Congress at Capitol Hill, received by Speaker Paul Ryan, due to address the U.S. Congress at about 8:30 p.m. India time. What can we expect looking ahead, and how do we look back at the joint statement? Is there some confusion over the climate change commitments at India's end, and what progress has been made on India's pitch for membership of the Nuclear Suppliers Group? With me in the studio is Meera Shankar, Ambassador Meera Shankar, former Indian Ambassador to the United States. Ambassador Casey Singh, senior diplomat, is back with us, as is Seshadri Chari, strategic affairs expert, BJP member. And from the United States of America tonight, Alyssa Ayres, who's of course with the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, let me get a perspective, an American perspective first. Alyssa, how's it gone so far? You know, the word diplomats like to use is consolidation. That's not a word that interests journalists who look for headlines. What's the headline so far?
Well, sadly, that's very true. A lot of the nuts and bolts of diplomacy don't tend to capture headlines because it's about incremental progress in many ways. For me, the big picture takeaway from this joint statement was this new phrase of enduring global partnership and the intense emphasis on clean energy and climate change cooperation.
Alyssa, the American media actually, reported the joint statement as a commitment from India that the Paris Agreement would be actualized this year. We've subsequently had government officials clarifying that there was no timeline set. There was certainly a commitment to try and move on it as soon as possible, but no timeline. That could have something to do with how the joint statement was worded, and we'll get into that in just a moment. But on this climate change issue, the Americans are in a hurry because Donald Trump may want to renegotiate it if he is, I shouldn't say God forbid, but if he is, God forbid, president. But with this new ambiguity on the timeline, is that a cause of concern?
I think that's certainly going to be something that both sides within both governments are going to be cross-checking with each other on, because it's really important to ensure that each side has the correct understanding of what the other has committed to. Let me just note that for me, one of the most interesting and exciting parts of the joint statement was the commitment to come up with another $1 billion in clean energy investment. So I think that's quite significant as well.
Let me before I get Seshadri Chari, and let me just get the diplomats to now come in. Ambassador Meera Shankar, you know, I have the statement here with me, and when you read it, you can understand, at least on climate change, why there's a degree of confusion. Because it actually says the United States reaffirms its commitment to join the agreement as soon as possible this year. India similarly has begun its processes to work towards a shared objective. It's kind of open-ended. We've subsequently had a clarification. But unnecessary confusion to some degree?
I think that perhaps there is no timeline,
yes,
as you said.
The Americans want one.
Yeah. I think the formulation has been worded to meet, to bridge the requirements of both sides. Mm. I mean, India is not perhaps yet ready to have a timeline on this, though it would like to do it,
yeah,
as soon as possible.
Yeah.
The U.S. has a timeline within the end of this year, preferably. Mm. Mm. So I think it's a way of bridging it, and therefore there's a certain ambiguity in the formulation.
Well, it has subsequently been clarified, and that could be, you know, something that therefore could end up not making specific progress. The other thing is, even, you know, the Westinghouse deal, it's still scheduled for 2017. We still do not know how Westinghouse and Toshiba will resolve the liability issues.
Well, I think the liability issues are on the way to resolution because of the setting up of the insurance pool,
yeah,
and the ratification of the Convention on Supplementary Compensation. I think both these have been recognized as significant steps. And what has happened is a preliminary early works agreement,
yeah,
which means that they will begin some kind of groundwork at the site, some kind of little bit of engineering works. But the actual price negotiations, the commercial negotiations, will take time because this is not a competitive bid where you look at the lowest
tender. I know, but
tender.
It's now entering its eighth year.
Yeah,
you know.
But the commercial bid was put by Westinghouse on the table only very recently.
Now, I want to look ahead at this address, Ambassador Casey Singh. What should we be looking out for? What do you think the Prime Minister's emphasis will be? The iteration of the friendship, both the personal friendship and the country-to-country friendship, has been done many times. What's the one new thing that the Prime Minister could frame, underline, emphasize in that address? How much of China-Pakistan do you anticipate we're going to see in that address?
I don't think he'll get into China and Pakistan. Pakistan maybe via terrorism.
Yeah.
China I don't see coming in, but I think he'll stick to the larger picture. He's reaching out to both sides of the house. So we would be hedging our bets because we don't know the next president is going to be a Democrat or a Republican.
Yeah.
So this is an opportunity to convey the spirit of the joint statement, which is titled Enduring Global Partnership.
Yeah.
So it'll be around enduring global partnership and telling both Republicans and Democrats of a commitment that we have, which started with Bush, has gone through the Obama presidency, and go on to the next presidency, whoever it is. So I would imagine he'll stick to the larger picture, but certainly he will get down to terrorism.
Yeah.
He would get down to certainly Pakistan, because Congress has taken a certain stance on F-16s and sensitized them. He would probably talk about Afghanistan, where a commitment has been there. But I think essentially it is to tell them that India is willing to do some heavy lifting now globally, whether it's sea lanes of communication, it's cybersecurity. We are now willing to work. And certainly, he would raise this issue of major defense partner. We heard that this had been taken up in the Congress earlier, but died a premature death, or it's lingering somewhere, where some kind of legislation is needed to give us equivalence with the major defense partners, that is the allies of US. Now, whether that's possible, I don't know, because there have been questions
what's
about
been
it.
The standout
but
for you
he would
so
probably
far,
want
Casey.
To sensitize them.
Casey, what's been the standout for you so far, before I get the political perspective from Seshadri Chari, so far from everything you've heard, what stood out for you?
No, there are 3-4 things, and we've heard all of them mentioned earlier. But again, coming back to the climate change, what you're talking about, obviously India is hedging their bets.
Yeah.
Because if Chinese are not going to ratify yet, and the Americans are not going to ratify, and they are 40% of the global emissions, we only got 4%.
Yeah.
And to make the agreement operational, you need 55 countries and 55%, at least with 55% of the emissions.
Yeah.
So India has agreed to go ahead, but I don't think we're going to be up, way up in the queue. We will wait and see what the US does. Same thing happened with CTBT. We always used to say about the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty will not be a hurdle.
Yeah.
But the US Senate itself never cleared it. So in many of your problems are taken care of by US Senate, where US administration themselves will be halted. So I don't see leading from the back. I think we will stay in the back.
So that's interesting, because Seshadri Chari, because then when you get down to measuring the specifics, you know, we are probably not going to be able to gain entry into the NSG 48 member club. You know, that meeting taking place in Seoul later this month. It needs consensus. China's not going to weigh in with that consensus, most likely. We are going to have to wait till 2017 to see whether the nuclear deal can actually go through with its first commercial contract. We are not exactly sure whether we can have this climate change Paris Agreement ratified. So are we still, Seshadri Chari, then in the realm of optics and photo ops and chemistry, but chemistry not translating into some sort of deep relationship?
No, I don't agree with this viewpoint at all, because I think going by the chemistry, you know, chemistry and body language are all passe. We are not looking into these aspects of chemistry and body language alone. See, India's entry into the missile technology control regime itself is one of the biggest takeaways as far as this particular visit is concerned. The fact that we have been working towards it is different. But it is the personal approach, the methodologies that have been worked out, and also the kind of impression that we have been able to create on all these members is what is more important. Till last year, even this regime was denied to us.
Yeah.
But now we have broken the ice and we have gone into this. And it goes, I mean, this is another feather in the cap of Narendra Modi, that he has been able to, every visit, he has been able to chisel down some differences or the other with the US administration. We have an excellent, he has an excellent equation with President Obama, no doubt about it. But he is also aware of the fact that come 2017, there will be a new president, whether Republican or Democrats is different.
Yes.
But we have been closely working with both Republicans and Democrats. And in the American system, it is the Senate which is also going to play an important role.
Sure. But
as somebody suggested, the adage is the president proposes and the Congress disposes.
Yes.
So that is why we are talking to the Congress.
That's an interesting point. This is the area
where we have to work out. And then we have a large stake as far as our India caucus is concerned.
Yeah.
So if you look at the entire picture, I think we are progressed enough as far as all these factors are concerned.
But you know, that's an interesting point. You make a very interesting point that the president also struggles to get legislation through the Congress. So actually, Mr. Modi's address to the Congress is extremely significant because it's not enough to actually get the president, given the fact that they don't necessarily control the House fully. That's an important point coming from you, Seshadri Chari. But Alyssa, if I can bring you in, there are other irritants that actually get they get submerged by the big headlines, by the big photo ops. There are other irritants between the two countries. There are human rights groups, for example, on the Hill pushing the Obama administration to take a stronger position, which our foreign secretary has gone on record to say there was no such reference at all in that meet at the White House. Similarly, today we've had three more NGOs actually put on the watch list of the Home Ministry, including the Open Society. So these are the things that actually kind of get buried with the big photo ops. How substantive are these as irritants?
You're absolutely right. There are a number of irritants and differences in the relationship. You haven't mentioned the many economic differences that continue to exist. I think these will continue. I mean, it's important for India and the United States to be able to talk openly about issues and concerns that each has. I would anticipate that people will be looking to the Prime Minister to say something about how he views India's democracy and the pushes and pulls. India has its own advocacy groups internally. So that, I think, will be the dialogue that will continue. I mean, the challenge of democracy is finding a way to accommodate many different voices, many of which will be critical.
But, you know, Alyssa, a number of Indians who may raise these questions at home would say, why do we have to go and explain this to the United States of America? Because you will remember that time when President Obama, in his last address here, spoke about preserving the diversity of India. But then he went from here to Saudi Arabia. And, you know, even those of us who've been raising these questions at home were just like kind of struck by the doublespeak of that moment.
You have a point. That's a very good point. You know, what I thought was very interesting in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing on India a couple of weeks ago was a comment that one of the senators made where he said, I believe it was the chairman. He said, India is a great democracy, and that's why we hold it to a higher standard. So I think that kind of gets to the crux of why you see a more intensified interest in these questions on this side from Americans.
Ambassador Meerashankar, is that how you would see it? Because, you know, we're only looking at the big picture, at the big photographs, right? But there is also all of this going on under the surface.
See, this is I would say this is a normal part of the process of democratic functioning,
yeah,
where you have different elements and different interest groups which operate within the political processes,
yeah,
but that doesn't really define the relationship. Now, India, as a democracy, and as a country which is seeking to bring 1 billion people into a decent life through democratic methods, mm-hmm, has a story to tell.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that Prime Minister, in his address to the U.S. Congress, is going to dwell not only on the global, enduring global partnership between India and the United States, but also about India as a democracy, the aspirations of its people, the economic motivation that we have to eliminate poverty, provide jobs to our people, because there has to be the sense that, you know, people in Congress see where we are coming from.
And we're now looking at the Congress as a really key constituency because we know that it's not enough to talk only to the president.
Well,
in a way.
Yes.
In a way.
I mean, yes, in all democracies.
Especially when we look at the sale, for example, of the F-16s, yes, to Pakistan, which would have gone through, but then,
sure,
was, you know, it was stopped at the last
because
moment.
Because the president defines and shapes foreign policy, but the budget comes from the Congress. And I think Mr. Seshadri Chari said that the president proposes and the Congress disposes, but in many cases, the Congress proposes and disposes also.
So, Seshadri Chari, let's bring you in. We're waiting for the Prime Minister to begin that address, I think, in a few minutes from now. What is the significance of this moment as you see it?
You know, the most important significance of this moment, I would say, is that Mr. Narendra Modi is the first and the last president, Prime Minister, who will be addressing the Congress before the takeover, before the change of guard in White House.
Yeah.
Therefore, actually, he is at a historic moment where he will be telling the U.S. Congress and also the U.S. electorates and the U.S. voters through the U.S. Congress that you have a huge global responsibility on your shoulders. India and U.S., two democracies, have to work together on all the aspects of global peacekeeping. And there are no, actually there are no flashpoints in the immediate vicinity of USA. All the flashpoints with which the USA is engaged
are all in India's vicinity.
Yes. India's neighborhood.
Yes.
And at the same time, India has been able to balance not only with the West, but even in Asia, we have been able to balance with Afghanistan, Iran, Pakistan, and on one side, with Japan and China on the other side. And there is a greater amount of realization even within the strategic community in China that in given the economic meltdown of China, they are also looking at India as an important trade partner and important economic partner to engage with. So in such a situation, the responsibility of behaving and leading the Asian growth is mainly on India as of now.
And yet,
so just as
and
U.S. is a great partner for us, China is also a partner for us. No, I think...
India may want to see it that way, but does Washington see it that way? Because, you know, KC Singh yesterday had that great line from Steve Cohen, right? Ambassador KC Singh, about, you know, we're the friend who isn't the ally and Pakistan's the ally who isn't a friend. So we may want to see ourselves as, through Washington's eyes, as the country that's leading the Asia growth story. But America is entangled in so many battles here in Afghanistan and Pakistan that it isn't that simple, Mr. Charlie.
No, these are all changed timings. You know, there was a time when U.S. was hyphenating India and Pakistan.
Yes.
There was a time when the same President Obama came to India and said that China will be leading the Asian renaissance and China is the natural leader of Asia.
Yeah.
But look at the situation today. The equation between US and Beijing, Washington and Beijing has changed. Mm. The equation between Washington and Islamabad has changed. And
we are now talking
to America from a position of strength.
But let me put that to Ambassador KC Singh. Are we talking, I'm only putting these questions because someone has to be the contrarian on this panel. This is, of course, you're all absolutely right. This is a relationship that's consolidating. There is certainly a personal rapport between the two leaders. Incrementalism is what mature diplomacy is about. I know all of this. I'm not headline hunting here. But let's ask the difficult question. Is this a relationship which we are negotiating from a position of strength, or is this a relationship that obsesses us more than it obsesses the Americans? I mean, I know it's an election year, we can't necessarily get the American media's attention, but even so.
No, Marka, it's neither obsession nor it's compulsion. It is a moving of international geopolitical plates. They are moving. Political and economic power is shifting to Asia. China has risen, radical Islam is a challenge. US has withdrawn, and obviously it's not going to be as dominant a power as it has been in the last 30 years or 20 years post-Cold War. Now, Russia has become assertive. Now, what do you do? And new countries have got nuclear weapons. There are dangers of weapons of mass destruction. So these are challenges. I think US realizes that it needs something akin to an ally which will not be an ally in Asia, which enables them to create a stable structure in Asia, which balances the rise of China. And that is how Bush conceived it. That is how really the outreach to India started, and subsequently Obama espoused the same approach that India has needed. But to think that we are indispensable to US existence would be a mistake, because they have a global approach. They have global issues. They deal with China on a multiplicity of issues. And India is only one of them. So that is the danger in treating yourself as a very close ally of the US in everything, because even the NATO allies, France, has always had that problem with US. The De Gaullean logic was that you can't make every interest of yours subservient to the US interests.
Yeah.
And therefore, India will always have areas where we don't agree with US. You take a simple thing like Iran. You know, they force you to do certain things vis-a-vis Iran. You will not trade. You will not do this.
Yeah.
And then they go and cut a deal with them.
Yeah.
You know, then you end up looking very silly. Yeah. So therefore, you can't always go along because a big power will have its global game. Now, you work with them to the extent that your convergences work.
Yeah.
But you would have divergences. You would have convergences with China on climate change and many things. So this is a time. Let me give you the example. In fact, this is Europe of 1870s. There were five great powers at that time. You had Austria, Russia, unified Germany, France, and England. And Otto von Bismarck of Germany said, in this, I want to be with three or more, not with two or less. You know, Germany was a balancing power. But once Bismarck left, they couldn't balance and the world wars came. Yeah. So we are in this kind of a subtle thing where India is a balancing power. We can go with Russia and China. We go in BRICS. We can go with the US. We can go with the US and Japan. But you should not be seen as opportunistic. By the same time, it needs tremendous deft diplomacy.
Okay, I want to just take this moment to actually cut across live to Capitol Hill, where Prime Minister Modi is now about to be introduced or is being introduced by Speaker Paul Ryan.
The gentleman from Texas, Mr. Poe, the gentleman from South Carolina, Mr. Wilson, the gentlewoman from Wyoming, Ms. Lummis, the gentlewoman from California, Ms. Pelosi, the gentleman from Maryland, Mr. Hoyer, the gentleman from California, Mr. Becerra, the gentleman from New York, Mr. Crowley, the gentleman from California, Mr. Barra, the gentleman from Washington, Mr. McDermott, the gentleman from New Jersey, Mr. Pallone, the gentlewoman from Hawaii, Ms. Gabbard, the gentlewoman from New York, Ms. Lowy, the gentlewoman from Maryland, Ms. Edwards, the gentleman from Maryland, Mr. Van Hollen, and the gentlewoman from California, Ms. Eshoo.
Senate, at the direction of the body, appoints the following senators and members of the committee as part of the Senate Discord, His Excellency Narendra Modi, into the House chamber. The Senator from Kentucky, Mr. McConnell. The Senator from Texas, Mr. Cornyn. The Senator from Utah, Mr. Hatch. The Senator from Missouri, Mr. Blunt. The Senator from Wyoming, Mr. Barrasso. The Senator from Mississippi, Mr. Wicker. The Senator from Tennessee, Mr. Corker. The Senator from Ohio, Mr. Portman. The Senator from Illinois, Mr. Durbin. Senator from Washington, Ms. Murray. The Senator from Michigan, Ms. Stabenow. The Senator from Minnesota, Ms. Klobuchar. The Senator from Maryland, Mr. Cardin.
The members of the escort committee will exit the chamber through the locked doors.
Ambassador Meera Shankar, we're waiting for the Prime Minister, of course, to be escorted out. The members of both houses there, in a roster list, Vice President Joe Biden there as well. Just your thoughts at this moment.
Well, my thoughts are, you were discussing, whether the visit is pure optics or there is some substance. I think one thing we've not really looked at is defense.
Yeah.
Where both sides, the U.S. has reiterated that it will work to find a way to give India the status of its closest partner come ally. Mm-hmm. We are at the moment at the status of closest partner.
Yeah.
So it would be a step up. But what was very interesting to me was that it says that a range of technologies will be available to India without license.
Yeah.
Now that to me was quite interesting because these would obviously be technologies which are held by the Pentagon or the US government. Because commercially, the private companies will not give technology without a commercial arrangement.
Yeah.
So this is quite significant because there are a range of technologies which are developed at the behest of the Pentagon and where Pentagon has the intellectual property rights. Mm. Now, what those technologies are going to be, I don't know, but this is the first time that the U.S. has said that India will have access to a range of technologies without license.
Alyssa, to pick up on what Ambassador Casey Singh said, that look, every country negotiates or goes along with a country only up until the point of convergence, and that's absolutely correct. But I do ask that question again, that is this a relationship that's getting more attention here than there, and how should we see that discrepancy factoring in that it's an election year?
Well, as you know very well from having spent time here, the United States is fundamentally very inward-looking. So the amount of time and attention that people give to foreign affairs is comparatively small. That said, when you think about the foreign affairs landscape, we tend to have a more intensive focus on issues that unfold in the Middle East because we are involved there. We have had troops there. That's something that tends to preoccupy Americans as the kind of core foreign policy challenges. Our NATO allies, with whom the United States has regular and ongoing engagement, get a lot of time and mind space. Yeah. With the rise of Asia, you're now starting to see a lot more attention to China, to India, increasingly to countries like Indonesia. I have been advocating for greater attention to India for a long time. I think we are starting to see that. But you're right, there probably is not a reciprocal amount of attention to India as one would wish to see.
Ambassador Casey Singh, what do you expect Mr. Modi to underscore in a few moments from now? Alyssa made this interesting point that people will look to hear more about, you know, democracy and the kind of things that people read in the New York Times there, which is always a very polarizing reference point here, as you know, from debates on social media.
Barkha, we are so interconnected and so globalized in terms of opinion. See what's happening in India. TV time, the whole of today, was about Urta Punjab and freedom of expression of Bollywood.
Yeah.
You have the protest. You don't need protests in Washington, where PM is speaking. There is a protest going on here. Now, PM can't be a statesman in Washington and a politician at home. Yeah. This catches up with you. Yeah. You know, this paradox is not sustainable. So PM has to take a stand on this. And the very first paragraph of the joint statement is about shared values. Democracy, freedom,
It's rooted in shared values of of freedom, democracy, universal human rights, tolerance, pluralism, equal opportunities for all citizens, and rule of law. Casey?
Now, if you cannot implement that at home, you can't come back and adopt a slightly quite a bit of a different standard and become political.
No, but every country, but let me argue this from the other side. Image. The United States of America also has to deal with its issues of inequity. There is, you know, there's the Black Lives Matter campaign. There is the shooting, and, you know, if Ferguson still haunts the debate around racial equality. There is even Obama, who's at the center of these optics, whom some say could not be black enough to fit in. So, you know, what goes on in India in a different way goes on in the United States of America and every country in the world. All democracies are works in progress.
Nobody's saying what goes on. What does the prime minister and the party do when it happens in India?
Yeah.
No, there will always be inequities.
Yeah.
But these statements you make abroad have to be in consonance with your actions and statements at home. You may still not be able to have perfect equality in India, but you can't remain silent and therefore appear conniving in whatever is happening and then go and make pious statements abroad. It'll not be sustainable.
Well,
look at how Mrs. Gandhi was treated when emergency was declared.
Yeah.
She was treated as a pariah in England. You know, she was pilloried abroad.
Yeah.
No, you can't say it's just one person.
No, but I would make the point that Prime Minister Modi has gone through that journey, right? He's gone through that journey of actually being, which is why the symbolism of this is...
No, he was not Prime Minister. He was not Prime Minister.
No, I know he was not Prime Minister, but I'm saying that there is personal relevance for him here, because this is a country that didn't give him a visa. He chose to bury that. He never made it an issue. It's almost become like his most important relationship. It's the country he's visited the most as Prime Minister.
I'm simply saying what is in the joint statement, the very first paragraph. You can't subscribe to that.
No,
and
I'm not
make
disagreeing
five
with that.
I'm
not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying, do we expect to hear that, Ambassador Meera Shankar, that underscoring in this address?
Yes, I would expect it. Because, you know, when you address the parliament of another country, you want to stress your vision of how you want to take the relationship forward, that is the India-US relationship. But you also want to stress your vision for your own country. Hmm. You know, what is it that motivates you? What are your aspirations? Because the idea is to build an understanding across the political aisle for your goals, for your national goals. So I would expect a mix of the two. I do think that, being given this opportunity itself shows the journey that Mr. Modi has taken. Because, you know, it was at the behest of the Committee on Religious Freedom that the visa was denied by the Bush administration. And then, you know, now he's going back and addressing some of those very people who
might chose have to deny him, who yes. might have been part of the decision to deny him a visa. Interesting. And the many ironies of politics and diplomacy. Alyssa, what would the U.S. Congress be looking to hear? You know, there is a great deal, I know, even for insular Americans, the kind of crowd he pulled at, you know, Madison Square Gardens. There is that notion of, you know, who's this leader who can draw in these kind of crowds? He's been controversial in the past. There is a economic interest attached, and, you know, it's all about the money, honey, as they say. So what will the U.S. Congress be looking to hear from Mr. Modi?
I think at a top line, what the U.S. Congress will be looking to hear is the Prime Minister's vision for what kind of power India will be on the global stage. And I think what you have seen with this government is a much firmer bid for power on the world stage. Previous Indian governments have talked about looking for India's rightful place in the world, but have been focused on the fact that India does have many domestic challenges to overcome. So it was almost as if previous governments saw overcoming domestic challenges as a step that needed to be completed before making a bid for greater global power. The Modi government is now openly talking about becoming a lead power, not a balancing power, and what that means in terms of having a broader ambition on the world stage, cooperation with the United States and other powers, that I think will be of great interest to members of Congress.
That's an interesting point, Ambassador Casey Singh. If you had to differentiate between Dr. Manmohan Singh's approach, and, you know, Dr. Manmohan Singh used to also be, Obama used to say that he was his guru, I remember, at one point. So there has been all this lavish sort of, you know, personal compliments to each other. I remember standing in the Oval when Dr. Manmohan Singh told President Bush that people of India love you, and that was not even true. So, you know, all this goes on, right? All this goes on. But beyond this, how do you see Manmohan Singh's approach to the America policy different from Narendra Modi? I personally think that Prime Minister Modi's global push is very much an extension of his domestic politics. And you never really saw that continuity in Dr. Manmohan Singh's tenure, where there were almost like two different departments.
Yeah, with Manmohan Singh, there were two things. Firstly, I don't think his party was entirely on board for a very close hug with U.S. on strategic issues.
Yeah.
So you could feel a real undertow there when he was going and engaging the Americans. And he was not the leader of the party. He was not the one who got elected. He's not the one who got a majority. He's not the one who led the campaign. So to that extent, it's more of a, you know, say, a chief executive officer rather than a prime minister. So his approach was cerebral. His approach was intellectual, cerebral, issue-based. Whereas Mr. Modi is a grassroots politician. His approach is emotional. It's based on feely, touchy approach.
Yeah.
And that's why the hugging and the touching, etc. So it's a politician's back-slapping politician.
He's actually, I would argue, yeah, quite American in his approach, right? Because there is the whole first name informality. There is the whole power of the image. There is the whole wearing your emotion in public, as you know, as we remember when he broke down about his mother at the Facebook event or one Facebook event on the West Coast, Alyssa. So actually, I there are a lot of Indians who feel that Prime Minister Modi is very American in some ways. Like, he's internalized all those American tools of political communication.
No, it's more than that. I think he's got the strength of this mandate behind him, the public opinion behind him, a huge social media following. So it's a combination of a grassroots politician plus the social media and the appendages that he has picked up. But I wouldn't go so far as to say that he's Americanized. You know, those he's trying to add on.
Yeah.
Frankly, if you ask me, he'll do better off without them, because he would be, if Modi was just Modi, he'd probably come forth even better if he spoke in Hindi. Brilliantly translated.
He spoke in Hindi at their joint press appearance. He spoke in Hindi. So he may well speak in Hindi. But, you know, Alyssa, the New York Times called this the most unlikely of friendships. Is that how it's seen there, this unlikely friendship? Because, you know, there are also commonalities. These are men who saw themselves as outsiders in the political capitals of their country. you know, they had unexpected journeys right to the, you know, the helms of their nations. Social media was a big part of their political campaign. Is this an unlikely friendship, as the NYT calls it?
To me, it doesn't appear that unlikely. I mean, I don't think that India and the United States are growing closer together because of personal chemistry. I would differ on that point. I think that both countries are growing together because of shared interests increasingly converging. Now, do the Prime Minister and the President have a good understanding with each other? Do they have good conversations when they're together? It seems pretty clear that that has unfolded. But it's also the case that President Obama had a great relationship with Prime Minister Singh. So I think that the people in the seats find a way to work with each other because the issues are so important and the convergences are increasingly important.
You know, so we're waiting for Prime Minister Modi to come there, but Ambassador Meera Shankar, you know, the speech is with us. It's embargoed till the Prime Minister actually speaks, so I can't share portions of it. I was trying to speed read it. But go ahead, because you did say that when you speak to the Parliament of another country, you do talk about your own or what the core values of your own leadership are. And Ambassador Casey Singh does make this point about there are controversies that, because there was controversy in the past, there will be controversies that will chase Prime Minister Modi well into the United States of America. You know, there are those human rights organizations. Oh, I'm so sorry. I have to interrupt you. There's the Prime Minister just arriving there at the U.S. Congress. And we will be able to, we can end the speculation now about what he might say and actually listen in. Let's just go across to those shots. All right, so Ambassador Meera Shankar, he's meeting everybody individually, and that's a kind of crowd of cheers going through the house. Just to complete your point as we wait for him to actually step up to the podium.
Well, I think that, you know, this is, like, as I said, India has got this fantastic story to tell.
Yeah.
That we are trying to bring 1 billion people
yeah.
out of, many out of poverty and into a kind of middle income status, prosperity, greater prosperity. And doing it with all the pulls and pushes of a very rowdy democracy.
Yeah, a noisy democracy.
Yeah, noisy. In fact, yes. This is what President Obama said to me when he had come here the first time and they had just lost the Congress. The Democrats had just lost the Congress.
Yeah.
And I was explaining to him that India, like the U.S., is an untidy and rowdy democracy.
Yeah.
And he said, untidy. That's what happened in the U.S. last.
All right. I think we can hold it there. And we will say thank you to Ambassador Casey Singh, to Ambassador Meera Shankar, to Alyssa. We will bring you back later as we, you know, we finally hear the Prime Minister in his own words. We do have the address before us, but it is naturally embargoed till the Prime Minister actually speaks. So let's wait for Prime Minister Modi there to begin his address to a joint sitting of the U.S. Congress.